It's Marie Turner. She is the president of the Galen Institute. We've been talking with her throughout this entire process about Obamacare. Well, here we are, Grace Marie, the day before.
Hello, C4. Nice to be with you. And we all are on pencil needles, aren't we? This is a decision that affects our basic freedoms as Americans.
I was just talking in the last hour with someone who wrote a piece, Grace Marie, talking about the fact that this whole broccoli analogy with that was made by Justice Scalia, it really boils down to whether or not the government can force us to buy something even as little as broccoli.
Well, you know, I sort of don't like this broccoli analogy because it trivializes it.
It does.
What we're talking about is the federal government forcing every one of us to use our after-tax money to purchase a private product that is likely to cost the average American family $20,000 a year. And we have to do this under penalty of federal law, that they're going to fine us if we don't do it. It is just, it's shocking. This is not, you know, unless the court decides it's a taxing power, even though it doesn't say that anywhere in the law.
Right.
And it's not the taxing power enabled by the 16th Amendment, which is on income.
And even though the Obama administration, during the bill process, when they were trying to get the law passed, they said it wasn't a tax. But when they got to the federal courts in Florida and Virginia, they argued that it was a tax. So they went back and forth themselves on this.
And that came up during the oral arguments before the Supreme Court in March, where one of the justices was asking the government's attorney, Mr. Verrilli, okay, yesterday you were telling us it is a tax, and today you're telling us not, it's not. Which is it?
Right.
Is it a tax or a fine? And he said, well, it's a tax fine.
You lay out many scenarios in terms of what happens, what if, and we'll go through a few of them. Let's start, though, with the one that everybody kind of is focused on, and that is the individual mandate kind of gets stricken, but most of it probably will be upheld because there are parts that people like keeping your children on to their 26 years old, no pre-existing conditions. When that's polled among the American people, the majority of people like that. They just don't like the overall law.
You know, and those provisions were put in really as at the last minute, kind of as window dressing for the law,
mm-hmm.
so that there would be something they could talk about in the first couple of years. And, of course, they were poll tested as being very popular.
Exactly.
So it's not surprising. But they're undermined by the fact that insurance companies have now said, the major insurance companies, everybody else is going to have to follow, that, oh, well, we can still keep 26-year-old kids on their parents' policies. It's going to cost a little bit more now.
Right.
We can continue to do that. The states can take over the job of helping people with pre-existing conditions to get coverage. That's much better as a state endeavor than the federal government trying to do a one-size-fits-all solution for the whole country. There are ways we can solve these problems. At most, the things that people like in the law maybe take up 30 or 40 pages of this 2,700-page law that already has 12,000 pages of regulations written.
And close to, I believe, is 150-some new agencies or entities created within it that could, who knows how many people need to be hired, thousands of employees hired to run those.
That's exactly right. And how much that really epitomizes what this law does. It puts our health sector, one-sixth of our economy, our decisions about ultimately probably life and death decisions, under control of government, not doctors and patients. At least half of doctors are seriously thinking about leaving the practice.
Oh, sure
of medicine.
They are.
Because they don't want to practice medicine under Mother May I with government telling them how they have to practice.
Particularly, Grace Marie, primary care physicians. The one area that Obamacare was attempting, if you listen to the advocates, trying to improve, which is access to care at the primary level to keep costs down later on as you got more serious illnesses. That part, if you talk to doctors, they're not going into primary care. As a matter of fact, they're going into specialties or not at all.
That's right. For one reason, because their medical bills, medical school expenses are so high that it's, for most people, it's like taking out a mortgage on the house. They've
yep.
got to do that and then still find a place to live. So they have to go into a specialty because it pays them enough to be able to live and pay back their medical school loans.
Well, let me ask you this, Grace Marie Turner, because if the other scenario is, which is the Supreme Court strikes down the entire law, says the whole thing is gone because of something that they were in such a rush to push this forward, the United States Senate and House didn't put severability language in there that the court mentioned kind of, but, you know, they could strike the whole thing down based on that and some other things. The question that people have, gave the poll numbers, 39% of Americans don't like the health care system overall. So if it's stricken down, we will have to deal with this because a lot of folks don't like what we have right now.
That's exactly right. There was a reason we did health reform, and there were serious bipartisan conversations going on in the Senate that would have led us, I believe, to probably a smaller bill, but one that would have solved the basic problems of the fact that people don't like that. They don't like it that 50 million people go without health coverage. We've got to solve that problem, but we've also got to address the cost problem. Obamacare missed the mark in providing universal coverage by 25 million, still have 25 million people without health insurance, and it's already increasing the cost of health insurance.
Well, they changed the debate. Grace, they changed the debate in the middle. They said, look, initially they started talking about reducing costs. They went away from that and all of a sudden went to opening up access to, you know, 50 million, 48, whatever they kept saying it was, million people. Mm-hmm. They changed language right in the middle.
They did, and of course it's going to cost more money. And when they told the American people, we're going to do all this and we're going to also reduce the federal budget deficit, it didn't pass the laugh test. People said you just can't do that. And
adding
now
more people,
the truth.
Adding more people in is going to reduce costs. I mean, a two-year-old would say, "Wait a minute, how does that work?"
And with the federal government mandating this huge long list of benefits that have to be included in the health plan, including the preventive care, that's how we've gotten to the anti-conscience mandate that the bishops are suing about.
Mm-hmm.
So you're and Bishop Lori has just been really terrific in talking about why this is so important, how we, the tentacles of this law are going to reach into every aspect of American society. We've only seen the beginning. That's why I do hope the Supreme Court sees that the fundamental architecture of this law is out of sync with both our Constitution, our way of life, and our economy. We've got to start over. And this Congress, I think, really gets the message. They didn't get it after HillaryCare. They said, good, we're done with health reform. This time, I think they say, okay, we realize there are problems, we've got to solve it, but we have to do a step-by-step approach to reform. Different members are taking on different issues. We've seen Paul Ryan taking on Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
We've got several members taking on Medicaid. We've got medical liability reform. We've got helping states with high-risk pools for people with pre-existing conditions. I think you're going to see a series of targeted bills addressing key problems. They're not social engineers here. They're not thinking we can come up with a better 2,700-page bill.
Right.
They're saying
they need to break it up. Grace Marie Turner, we're out of time. I appreciate it. She's president of the Galen Institute. And let me tell you this. If tort reform isn't a big piece of that, then a lot of it is not going to be addressed when it comes to cost. Thanks, Grace Marie.
Thanks, C4.